From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for January 7th, 2022. The Packers wrap up the season this Sunday afternoon in Detroit, and the Bucks are on the road till Thursday when Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors come to town. A Florida man walked into a Waffle House and tried to hold up the place using his finger guns. Remember when you were 3 years old and you shot the bad guys with your finger? Well, this yutz announced that he was high and drunk and holding up the place. He literally was left out of the Waffle House. So he holstered his finger guns and went home, where he was arrested. Here's a disturbing notion. Scientists say space colonists will likely resort to cannibalism if the farming and crop systems fail, or a supply ship doesn't make it on time, or the planet doesn't have a Waffle House. Speaking of that, we know the Hungries can strike at any time. Well, Germany has come up with an ingenious solution. It's a 24-hour sausage vending machine, hopefully with sauerkraut. That just might be the answer for those cannibalizing astronauts. And in Israel, a man owes $3.3 million in back child support, but the government worked out an easy payment plan for him, $31.25 a month. If you're doing the math at home, he'll be making payments for the next 8,000 years. I'll bet his ex-wife is seriously unhappy. And our strange headline of the day, this from the Associated Press. Food and Drug Administration approves third silicone breast implant. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Chris Evers, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. As much as I'd like to ask some questions on that last one, I think the more important question is, do finger guns fire in the vacuum of space? I think the question on everyone's mind. Maybe good to start with a little humor, as it was a bit of a rough start to the year, especially for the NASDAQ, down 4.5% this week, closing down 709 points today at 14,936. Not quite as rough for the S&P, down 1.9%, closing down at 46.77 to end the day. The Dow lost 5 points today, down 107 for the week, down 0.3% to close at 36,232. You know, I think the big story this week, and certainly we'll get into it in a bit, is just how swiftly the yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury has moved higher, up 26 basis points this week. We had finished the year at 1.51%, now at 1.77. That's maybe a quick look at the numbers for the week. But Joel, we got quite a bit on the economic front. Certainly employment data, which we can touch on in just a bit. But I think, some data on manufacturing, some data on the service sector. What really stands out to you there?
Kyle, I mean, I guess I just put it all together and it all stands out that it's showing that we're still growing, that the economy is in a pretty good position. Remember that, going into the pandemic, we had the longest growth of an economy that the U.S. has experienced in modern times. And then we had that quick recession from the pandemic, and we've recovered from that. And a lot of things are, we had reports this week on construction spending at an all-time high, factory orders at an all-time high, the ISM services index and the ISM manufacturing index, both up 19 months in a row. The services index was at an all-time high in November. So there's a lot of good out there. It's, and there's more to come, because there are still reports of supply chain bottlenecks and inflation and things like that, and not being able to find the workers that companies need.
Yeah, I think the workers are really the question right now. We got some more data on employment this week.
Yes. Yeah. So in December, employers added 199,000 jobs, which was less than half of what analysts had expected. A lot of the numbers that we got on employment didn't account for this latest surge in COVID cases, you know, with the Omicron variant. So that's a whole big question mark of what's going on and what's to come. But the unemployment rate went down to 3.9% in December. That's the lowest it's been since just before the pandemic in February of 2020, when it was 3.5%. And it's also down to show where we've come. It's down from a record 14.7% in April of 2020. So just in that time since April of 2020 until the end of 2021, you know, we've done a lot on the employment front.
And the Fed didn't have all of those numbers in front of them when they were talking last month. And we got minutes on that Fed meeting this week. I think a bit of a shock to the market, but maybe not surprising when you really look at the way the data has been trending, when you really look at the way the Fed's been talking about things. And Steve, as we look at, you know, kind of the Fed's response this week, sorry about that.
Kyle, is it fair to say that we're not in the office?
It is fair to say that we are not in the office. Steve, as we look at the Fed response this week, and, you know, in response to the unemployment number, in response to the data that's come out, I think that the challenge we have now is that we're on the verge of seeing Fed moves. The FedWatch tool from the CME now prices in about a 75% chance of at least one rate move coming in the March meeting. We've got the potential for probably three rate moves this year, and it's reflected in the 10-year this week. I think a lot of the reason for market volatility is, you know, just looking at how quickly rates moved up this week. What are you seeing?
Yeah, Kyle, everybody's eyes have certainly been on the Fed. And as we have been talking for the last couple of months, anytime you get Fed rate increases in the past, it tends to translate to higher market volatility. I think we're going to continue to see market volatility as we move into this year, as people watch the Fed. There are a lot of investors that certainly pointed to the Fed as not reacting soon enough to try to contain some of those inflationary pressures last year. But I would almost say that the Fed not being knee-jerk with their reaction let this economic recovery take hold. Yes, it did mean that we had a little bit of an uptick in consumer prices, but it also meant that this economy didn't stall out and push back into a period of recession. Now that the Fed knows that this economy is strong enough to absorb some rate increases, they're going to continue with their plan to return to a more neutral monetary policy, and they're going to start to unwind from some of this fiscal easing that they've had for the last year.
Well, and Steve, I think you really hit the nail on the head. It wasn't, you know, about anything other than trying to let this economic recovery take hold. And I think the Fed has been clear that we're at or near full employment now. Certainly plenty of room still for the employment picture to improve. Joel, you've looked at a number of data points on that. But, you know, really, I think as we talk about what the problem is not anything other than the unevenness of the recovery, that there are still things we need to get through. And in particular, Chris, one of the things that, you know, will stand out to clients as they listen, or listeners to the podcast overall as they listen, is that a number of us are working from home again. A number of us are either forced to be at home because we're in quarantine or just choosing to. And so you've got as many as potentially 5 million people in the next couple of days that are going to be in some kind of quarantine here in the U.S. That has economic consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. As Joel said earlier regarding the labor market report that we saw recently, you know, it doesn't really impact or hasn't shown the impact of Omicron yet. But looking forward to next month's report, I think we're going to see some of that data in the labor market report. You're going to see essentially more, you know, difficulty within the labor market of having people healthy in the office to get work done. I mean, you look at the labor force participation rate, And I think that's really telling right now in terms of what's going on. We have a very low unemployment rate, but there's been a fair amount of people that have dropped out of the labor force. And for some and for many, the reason is either childcare again, that they're unable to get that, or they feel personally, you know, unsafe to go back to their workplace because of the pandemic. And I imagine Omicron will probably impact that as well. But the second piece of that is you look at, if you break down the labor force participation by age groups and you look at those over 55, that's where we've seen the most significant decrease in labor force participation. And it begs the question, have a lot of people retired early? And we've talked about that a little bit. But if there is a fair amount of people that have retired early, you know, it's more uncertain whether or not they return to the labor market when they feel more, you know, safe to do so, or if they just decide, hey, you know, I've been out of the labor market for a year and a half. Maybe it's time just to say this is a permanent retirement. And that's what we're looking into, you know, into the back end of 2022 and hopefully whenever we get, you know, beyond Omicron as well.
And Chris, on the podcast last week, Art Rothschild brought up the term wealth effect. And so that especially of those older people in the labor force who have dropped out, that plays a role there. I mean, the stock market's been up, you know, people looking at their portfolios at the end of 2021, I mean, they're probably feeling pretty good. And housing prices have, you know, we've seen those go through the roof, pun intended. So there's that feeling of, you know, that maybe you can afford to not go back to work. And again, that's going to frustrate some employers who are lacking for workers.
When your 401k sees returns that are growing faster than what your wages are growing, it's not a surprise that some people have decided to call it quits, Joel.
And I think you add in not just retirements, but those folks that just need a break, that are exhausted from, you know, Chris, you mentioned childcare, the number of working mothers who also had to deal with at-home education for half a year, then who had to deal with starting and stopping school as COVID breakouts happened this last school year. You know, they're worn out. You add in, you know, I think the number of people who just haven't been able to take vacation, and rather than, you know, their employers allowing them to take a bit of leave for a month or two, they're just deciding to leave the workforce for a month or two, and they'll get back in when they're ready. Either because they've been able to save a little bit from not spending over the pandemic, or, you know, perhaps because, you know, it's just not worth it to them anymore to, you know, to keep on. And so I think, you know, you'll look at all of these reasons and you add up all of the pieces that have led to some of the challenges. It's a big issue that's led to inflation. It's a big issue that's led to, you know, some of the shortages that we've been dealing with. And of course, I think, you know, you add in the resilience of the U.S. economy, you add in the number of people who have left maybe larger corporations with the hope of starting their own successful business. And that was a conversation, you know, that Paige had mentioned last week on the podcast. And I think, you know, is ringing true. It's something I talk about in the newsletter that's going out this afternoon. You know, I think that there's all this disjointedness, all this unevenness to the current recovery. And it leads to these periods where things get a bit ahead of themselves. The pendulum swings a little too far one way. We may this week have swung back a little bit, and probably for good reason, as you look at some of the steps the Fed is likely to take. Chris, I know you mentioned when you look at the things that really struggled this week, it's a lot of the speculative plays, right? It's not the higher quality names.
Yeah, this week with interest rates going up, and we've talked in the past on the show of how growth stocks tend to be in this environment a little bit more sensitive to interest rates because of the discounting mechanism of their earnings being further out in the future. But if we even took that a step further, it's not necessarily the big tech names that we've talked about before, of the Microsofts and Apples and Amazons and Googles, that sold off a little bit more this week. It's over the last handful of months, it's been more of these speculative names that have been really popular amongst, you know, I'll call it do-it-yourself investors that are buying what I would call as momentum investments, where they're buying something that they've seen go up a lot and they're buying it on hopes that it continues to go up. You know, things like you know, a Peloton or a Zillow or a Zoom or these things that have had a story behind it, maybe not the earnings that matter, but a story behind the stock. And we've seen some of the air let out of those trades. I personally think that's healthy for the market. I think it's more natural for the successful businesses to actually become the successful stocks, and those that have profitability are the ones that do well versus, you know, a stock that has a good story to tell, so to speak, about what the future may or may not look for them.
And, you know, Chris, that's a great reminder for people in investing that balance is very important longer term. Individual stocks are inherently more risky. It's not about the names you pick. It's about the allocation you choose. And for times like this and the kind of uncertainty we're seeing moving ahead, you got to make sure you got the right mix and the right balance to navigate these waters.
You know, Steve, I think the remaining challenge that we have is that valuations on stocks are a bit pricey right now. We certainly have mentioned it just about every week that we've done this podcast. But I think important to point out that even as the benchmark 10-year treasury moved to, you know, over 175 this week, the earnings yield on the S&P 500 for forward 2022 earnings, 4.6%, the 10-year treasury at even 180, you've still got a massive cushion. There was a stat in Barron's this week that pointed out that since 1960, the S&P has averaged 11.8%, 12 months after the difference between that 10-year benchmark and the earnings yield on the S&P 500 is 200 to 300 basis points. And so, you know, we're almost 300 basis points higher in earnings yield right now than we are in the 10-year treasury. I think we've got history on our side in terms of, you know, that being a favorable outlook for stocks. Of course, the one challenge is that period of time since 1960, we haven't seen interest rates as low as they are for most of that. And so, you know, I think this time is a little bit different in that regard. At the same time, I think, you know, if you can stomach some of the short-term volatility, stocks look pretty attractive.
Kyle, you would have to have a huge miss in earnings and a huge uptick in interest rates for those numbers to narrow to the point where it becomes a coin flip.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right point. And if anything, the earnings forecast has gotten a little bit better the last couple of weeks for this year. I think, you know, we got some great surprises last year on earnings, which carried the day. And so, you know, I think I remain, and this is the cliche, I remain cautiously optimistic. Plenty to be cautious about, especially over the next couple of weeks as we deal with Omicron, as we deal with, you know, what the Fed's going to do maybe in the next 8 weeks. But optimistic that there's still some room to run for stocks. Joel, I think the other big thing to point out is we've got a newsletter coming out this afternoon. You know, in addition to an article from me talking about resilience, we've got some other good stuff in there from you. We've got a mention of one of our colleagues who retired at the end of the year. What stands out to you there?
We've got a video from Chris, too. Chris is talking about talking with you, actually, about measuring risk and how important that is in trying to figure out that balance between risk and performance that you're looking for.
Well, as always, we enjoy everybody that listens. We enjoy doing the program for you, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.